Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here in the main feed. A day early because there was news so big that we decided it was good to get together sooner and chat. My name is Kenny and her name is Sandra. Hi Sandra, how are you coping with all the madness in pro wrestling right now?
Yesterday was a bad day. Like, it was a really bad day. Between all the WWE stuff and like the crazy protests in Michigan with like people waving Confederate flags and swastikas on the steps of the Capitol, yesterday was a bad day. Today is better, it seems.
Howard Finkel died, so
which sucks.
So
that's, you know, also not a good day. It, just kind of a series of bad days. I'm not going to lie to you, Kenny. Things are shitty, but you know, we're here and we're talking about wrestling and things keep happening, and I'm glad that we can still get together and record, at least, since we do this remotely anyway all the time.
Yeah, we're always just here, but yes, it's been a crazy kind of 24 hours, and it's difficult because I feel like we try to be like a kind of level ground when we have conversations about this stuff, and there's always both sides that come in. There's the WWE apologists who basically would be like, Vince only murdered a person in front of their own family. Don't be mad at him for it.
Right.
And then there's the other side where people are just like, it's another anti-Vince McMahon day. Let me get my bits on. So it's always trying to deal with those two things. And we will talk about AEW and NXT from last night, but let's just get straight into the news. So WWE announced yesterday on a conference call at noon that they were going to be... basically, there was going to be staff cuts to try and make... you know, to try and make themselves look better, essentially, for their stock price and their quarterly report next week. So they ended up letting go of 39 performers. There is a lot. So I've got the names of all the performers that they let go. So, before we talk about the actual specifics, how did you find out? And it's a very bad look for WWE.
It's a very bad look for WWE. I mean, I found out because I woke up, you know, as customary in the afternoon yesterday, and I had a bunch of messages from friends, and in the most recent messages were just like, holy shit, did you see this press conference? And I was like, I have not, because I'm just waking up. And then I started reading the article, and then names were still just kind of coming out throughout the day. I was following Sean Ross Sapp on Twitter. He was keeping everyone pretty updated on names as they happened, because WWE was basically making phone calls throughout the day, was my understanding. And like, as more people answered the phone and had the conversation, they were updating their stuff. So it's, yeah. So I kind of found out through messages and stuff and started following it throughout the day. And it was a big bummer, honestly. Like, it's just, it sucks. And, you know, like, seeing reactions from people who were let go, and, you know, some of them are trying to be very positive. I know Hurricane Helms put out like the most adorable video of him and his son, and was like, I hope this brings a smile to your face. And I was like, you are the loveliest. And, you know, Drake Maverick put out a very like heart-wrenching reaction to everything right after he got off the call. And it's just, it's rough. It's really, really rough. How did you find out?
I found out because, well, I initially found out that there was a conference call where there was going to be releases. That's what I heard. And then I think that the one, because I can't remember the exact order, but like, if I'm being completely honest, and I do want to say that anything that I say on here, because I know that I want to make sure that you know my intent, I don't mean to downplay anybody who's been let go. I don't want that to come across. But, you know, we're having conversations about it, so there inevitably is going to be a little bit of analysis about it. So I don't want anyone to feel like it's me being a dick about it. But when the first few were coming out, like the kind of the Drake Maverick and the Heath Slater and all those kind of ones, they were ones I was not 100% shocked that would be let go at some point in time, but mm-hmm. I was very shocked by the timing. The first one that really shocked me was Rusev. That was the one where I was like, what? Rusev's gone? And then, like, Gallows and Anderson, they were... I don't think I saw them in the right order. I think I just kind of saw a bunch of them.
Because
from, like,
Rusev was later. Rusev was one of the last names added to the list.
Because I just, like, only really saw... I can't remember the order of which I saw stuff. I remember Rusev being the one where I was like, oh, God, he's being released? And I think, you know, not to do a cheap plug at this point in time, as I am about to. But, you know, Finn called me this morning. Finn said, look, I think we should do another overrun. Because mm-hmm. we'd already done one on Tuesday, and I think if we put it out today, it's very dated. It would just be really weird for us to release one today and not talk about what happened yesterday. So we did another one, and one of the things that we had both kind of talked about and is that there are a lot of names on that list that they probably were, at some stage in the future, going to trim. And that's just the nature of the beast, because you can't keep... You know, you and I talked about this on Facebook yesterday about how, like, they've stockpiled so many people. And it was eventually, mm-hmm. you know, they were eventually, that was going to come back to bite them because they've tried to keep so many people. I think the big thing here that is bad is the timing of it, because getting rid of all these people, say best case scenario, they get 3 months severance pay, right? Which is usually good to get 3 months severance pay. The problem, I think, for most people is that, you know, we don't know when this is going to end. The mm-hmm. coronavirus situation. So say it's going to end in January. Say everything's back up and running by January, which is like maybe, maybe not. The issue is that you've got people who, and I'll do the comparison that I did with Finn on the overrun. Heath Slater, I don't know how much he gets paid, but say, for example, Heath Slater gets paid $175,000 a year. That's maybe the ballpark what he gets, right? Probably more, but I'm trying to be conservative. So I googled it, and it was like, in the state of New York, so this is just like an average guess of it, $175,000, the tax on that would be $52,000. So you would clear $122,000 a year, which would mm-hmm. work out at about $10,000 a week. A month, sorry, $10,000 a month. So $10,000 a month. Now that sounds like a lot, right? And that's, you know, there's a lot of us who would love to be earning $10,000 a month. But my point about it is that, so Heath Slater has been used to, you know, living on $10,000 a month for however many years he's been working there and doing what he's been doing. My issue is more that, like, yeah, so great, he's going to get $10,000 a month for the next 3 months, but then he has nothing for the foreseeable future, and he can't go out and get another job in the same field that he does because nothing's going on. And then the economy might mean that he is not able to go out there and get anywhere near that amount of money anymore. For a long time. That to me is where I think I'm finding it difficult to stomach that it's happening.
Well, that's the difficult thing right now, is that anybody who's let go right now, like in this current climate right now, you can't go find another wrestling job. Like a lot of people's reactions seem to be like, oh, who's AEW going to pick up? Who's Ring of Honor going to pick up? Who's Impact going to pick up from this? And I'm like, nobody. Like nobody right now, because nobody can run shows and nobody can do anything. So why would any company want to be hiring? Like maybe AEW is, you know, in contract negotiations with the Revival, and I don't know that to be true, but like, I mean, put two and two together, that seemed to be the goal, right? But even that, like, I don't know if that's going to be on hold until things pick back up again, because we don't know. After AEW runs out of tapings, we don't know what's going to happen.
Well, the other thing is...
Because I know that they're doing Double or Nothing, but it's not like anybody can just go out and get another job in wrestling right now. And it's not like a lot of... I mean, like, for some people, this is their dream job. And it just sucks. And to be let go when everything is so uncertain, and when, you know, there isn't the opportunity to go out and find something else, is just, it's the shittiest time to let this many people go.
And the other thing is, like, with AEW, is AEW, because they're not going to be running any TV, like, they're not going to be getting a live gate from anywhere, probably for the next 6 months minimum. That means that they're probably just going to break even this year. Now, look, I know AEW is run by a billionaire, boo-hoo-hoo. But the point is that they're not going to be making a lot of money this year, which means they're not going to be making a lot of talent purchases. I think at most, if they took 5 of the people out of like the 39 that have been let go, that would probably be on the high end of what they're able to do financially. Mm-hmm. So, it really sucks. And
they also don't want to be the company that's like the WWE refuge either. You know, they've said that in the past, where there are certain talents, obviously, that they've talked to and that are, you know, pals with certain people in power there. But they don't want to just be like a cash cow for everyone who gets fired from WWE.
And the other thing is, you know, like I say, because I'm kind of in. I mean, look, I do think it's really shitty. I'm not defending WWE in this whatsoever. What I think would have been the correct thing to do, if you know, because if you look at it as a business, right, which they are, so you have to look at it that way for, if you're going to be fair to them. What they should have done is if they decided these people were the people that they were no longer going to need, then make a list of who they are, and then when everything's, but when the economy's back, then let them go. Let them go when they can go out and make money elsewhere. And, you know, Finn actually made an interesting point that on the Overrun. It's the last one I'm going to give away because you should go and listen to it. But, and I didn't even know this story because it kind of happened when I dipped out of wrestling in 2004. And Test, Andrew Martin, he was actually let go when he was recovering from neck surgery by John Laurinaitis, and he wasn't able to work. So. And there was such an uproar about that at the time, apparently, that WWE changed their procedures so that, like, they could not let anyone go who was, you know, recovering from an injury. People had to be cleared. You had to be medically cleared before WWE could ever let you go. So there's been stuff that's happened in the past. I was curious to get your take on, before we go into the names, the specific names, do you think that this is going to have a big impact on the sort of general populace that watch pro wrestling, that watch WWE? Do you think WWE are going to see, like, is this going to be a big story that's going to haunt them, or is this going to be a story that you think is going to go away eventually once everything goes back to normal?
I don't think anything haunts them. I don't think anything haunts them. I don't think that stuff gets to them, right? Like Saudi Arabia should have been a big story that haunted WWE and it got a lot of mainstream media attention, but they're able to sweep these things under the rug, keep going, and just kind of go on with their business. Like, I mean, anyone in corporate powers of positions are not going to be as compassionate as some of us like just watching it. So anyone in the business world is like, oh, good, you did what you had to do for your bottom line, which I think is incredibly shitty and inhuman, but whatever. I'm bad at capitalism. We've established this. So I don't think it's going to haunt them. I mean, it was making mainstream news yesterday. Like I saw CNN and Forbes and a whole bunch of places
It
reporting
was
that
on BBC
WWE had
News
let
in the
go.
UK. Yeah, it was
Yeah,
everywhere.
BBC News. So, I mean, it's not like it's not getting attention, but WWE gets a lot of negative attention for a lot of things, and it just kind of keeps going, right? Like, it's usually just business as usual. And I wish that it would make more of a difference. I know a lot of people were very upset yesterday talking about canceling their. I mean, whenever stuff like this comes up, there are some people who cancel their network subscriptions and, you know, decide to go elsewhere or support other things, whatever. I don't think that number is great enough to really affect change. And I can't say that I'm on my high horse about it because I still have the WWE network and I still use it. You know, like I use it for my job here, obviously. I think if we didn't do retro, then I would probably consider getting rid of it just because, you know, like I don't use it that often other than retro content.
Well, also you're not someone, you're not someone, they're not your first choice of pro wrestler that you
No,
watch.
I'm very like a casual WWE fan when it comes to stuff that I don't cover for the podcast, right? Like even, you know, like WrestleMania I watched, obviously, and enjoyed it. I really did. Like I don't want to sound like I'm just an anti-WWE, but today I'm in kind of an anti-WWE, the world is bleak kind of mood, which sucks because the shittiest thing is that they didn't have to do this to save their company, right? Like they had to do it to meet projections so that their stock price didn't fall or whatever bullshit. And I'm so tired of, I don't know, people sacrificing human good to the economy. It just makes me really angry in today's day and age, and I don't want to go on a rant about it, but I really, really could.
But my point was going to
I'm
be that I think that
a little
the,
ball of rage.
you know,
But like the
so
whole thing is they didn't have to do this to save their company, right? Like they had enough cash reserves and they're still having enough money come in through their TV deals. Like that hasn't been cut. So they're in like the best possible position financially of any company. Not to say that they wouldn't be losing money, not to say that they wouldn't be you know, having to look at things to keep themselves at, you know, mainline. But like nothing can be like at normal level right now. The world is insane and there's a pandemic. Like every company is going to be struggling. Every company is going to be having difficulty. They're the first company to make widespread cuts when they're the ones in the best financial position. And it just makes them look like supervillains. And Vince McMahon is on Donald Trump's advisory board to reopen America. And what dystopian hellscape is this?
It's really bad. I mean, because the other thing that I didn't realize was, so basically the producers have been, who the producers all but Kurt Angle have been furloughed, which means, now furloughed over in the UK, and this is not a political thing, this is just a country to country thing, it's not, but in the UK, so furloughed means that if I worked for a company and I earned $20,000 a year or £20,000 a year, and the company couldn't afford, you know, the coronavirus comes around and whatever, the company I work for can furlough me, which means that the government will pay 80% of my wage for the duration of the coronavirus. The company who I work for can also choose to top it up with the other 20 or not. But, you know, and I think it goes up to, like, you get 80% of your salary up to the amount of £2,500 a month. That's the max they do. So if you're furloughed, like, furloughed over here is, like, great. Like, furlough here is, like, you work from home. Sometimes you might not even need to work. You're just kept on and furloughed until this is over. So there's, like, it's really good. Furloughed in America is unpaid leave.
Right.
There is nothing. Now, you can... I was looking into it today. You might know more about this than I do, Sandra, but you can, apparently, most people who are furloughed, it's unpaid leave for the duration of however long this goes on, but you are able to, in some cases, qualify for unemployment benefit while
you're
off.
Yeah, I actually have 4, like, unemployment tabs open on my computer right now because I've been looking into it.
Okay.
Because things have been, and I still don't even understand all of the ins and outs of it. It's very complicated, like, because I'm in a situation where I left my job voluntarily due to COVID, like, because I didn't feel safe going in, and a hospital visit is going to be more expensive than a month off of work, which is just an insane position that I have to be in, and it makes me crazy. Like, because I left voluntarily, I wasn't sure that I qualified for unemployment, but newer regulations are coming out that, like, if you leave due to this, then there's like a certain box you can check. So I'm gonna give it a go and see what happens. I have no idea if it's gonna work or not, but they are very clear that if you've been furloughed or if you've been laid off, you know, if your job has cut staff, if your hours have been cut, you can qualify for some unemployment assistance. So they have expanded unemployment to cover a lot of situations where it normally wouldn't in the United States. So at least that's helpful. Like, I don't know how much you can get, but it is something, which is better than zero. So yeah, like, anyone who's been furloughed from this should qualify for unemployment if they, you know, if they don't find another job, which, like, how can you find another job right now?
Well, that's the thing, right? Because you can, I mean, you know, retail you can do, but the whole thing for you, for example, is that you're not working in your job because you have a fear of contracting the coronavirus, which means that you would, you know, basically be bankrupted through healthcare costs.
Uh-huh.
So you're not doing it. So, and I think that if WWE were in any sort of trouble, I would understand today or yesterday, but they're not. So that's where it's difficult. The other part of it is, now, there's a lot of people who are kind of going, because I think there is a, you can think this is a shitty thing to do and still have the network, and it doesn't make you a bad person. You know, it's not like,
right.
But I think there is, you know, there are people who are very much like, fuck them, I'm canceling the network, whatever. The network's great value for money, but at the same time, if you don't watch the stuff, then why would you have it? I totally mm-hmm. I get that. I watch enough on it that I, you know, and I can afford to have it, so those two things make me have it. But if I didn't,
and if it makes you feel icky to still have it and you want to cancel it, fine,
totally
go
fine.
Ahead
yeah.
and do that. Like, that is your choice. Like, I'm not going to tell anyone what to do with their money. Like,
I think it was Adam
I
James
can't
on
claim
our...
to be a big moral authority. Like, I still shop at Amazon sometimes, and Amazon is deplorable, but, like, just given finances and what I need to do, sometimes it is available and it is there, and, like, there's no ethical consumption in late stage capitalism, and that's just how we are, right? Like, you can't crucify anyone for not living in a commune and, like, raising their own food and stuff. Like, that would be ethical, but we don't have that option, most of us.
Yeah, no, and I think that it's very difficult because it's very black and white right now. But for me, the people who, you know, if you are listening to this, because a lot of people supported us on Patreon because we're going through a rough patch, which has got even rougher, by the way, because, you know, our YouTube channel, which, you know, we make revenue from, YouTube ad rates are down 40% this month.
Are they really?
And they're probably going to go down another 20%. So, you know, this is really hitting everybody at a lot of levels. So it's really rough. So, you know, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I'm not saying you need to watch our YouTube video because the rates are down. Do you know what I mean? I still, you know, consume things if you enjoy what we do and you want to support us and that sort of stuff.
I'm not going to lie. If you just want to put on a playlist of Inside the Ropes videos and just, like, let it go when you're doing stuff around the house, we're not going to stop you.
No,
do that.
We
that
encourage
would be
dope. You. Just do that when you wake up in the morning, when you're getting ready for work, stick on a playlist and then just turn it off when you go to work.
Or don't turn it off. Just let it autoplay until it stops.
just let us have your electricity bill run out. But, you know, buy t-shirts for the wrestlers and pro wrestling tees who've got a t-shirt store, or support them in whatever they do next. And, you know, because I'm even thinking about maybe there's a way that, like, I can reach out to somebody and we can do, like, an Inside the Ropes live on Skype or something. Or
That'd
not
be
on
cool.
Skype, but, like, on YouTube, we can, like, make it, like, a pay-per-view thing where it's, like, a couple of dollars or something for people to sign up and watch it, and, you know, that can get the wrestler or something. I'm trying to think about some stuff. But anyway, so let's get into the names. I'll go through the names. I mean, we don't have enough time to go through everybody piece by piece, but I've kind of, if you want to hear what I think about specific people, you know, listen to the overrun with Finn. But this is for mainly for Sandra, and I'll chime in bits and pieces. So I'll go through them. And so the NXT ones, the only person who is a regular on NXT TV who has been affected is Deonna Purrazzo, who I know that you're a big fan of. The other NXT ones are Dan Matha, MJ Jenkins, and Josiah Williams, who was the rapper who did a lot of the was it Wrestle something? He did like loads of remixes, and he came out
Wrestle and Flow.
Wrestle and Flow, yeah. And he came out with the Undisputed Era ones. Also Alyssa Marino, who I don't know who she is in WWE, but she was in NXT, so she's been let go. But yeah, so I'll go through the
Wasn't
list.
Wasn't there an Alexander or something too?
Oh yeah, Alexander Jaksic. Sorry, yes, Alexander Jaksic is the other NXT one. So yeah, let me go through the names. Just shout out when you want to discuss anyone a little bit. No Way Jose is gone. Mike Kanellis.
I mean, I will say Deonna Purrazzo had put on Twitter that this is something she's been struggling with wanting for the past year. Like, she's obviously Deonna Purrazzo, whenever she was on TV, was basically to be fed to someone who was a bigger star. And that might not be what she wanted when she came to WWE. Like, interpreting her tweet, it's that she's kind of been struggling with this for the past year. And she's kind of like, all right, this has happened now. Onward and upward. Like, it's a shitty time, but, like, it didn't sound like it was the worst news in the world to her, which is a good thing.
No Way Jose, Mike and Maria Kanellis.
Which, Mike Kanellis, wasn't it last year that he asked for his release?
He did want out, yeah. He did want out.
Yeah.
So
I think that there are some names on the list where, I mean, this is, again, the shittiest time to let people go. The shittiest time of all times. But there are people who were struggling with wanting to be in the company if they weren't being used and they weren't being allowed to do what they did. So Mike and Maria did not surprise me, given that Mike Kanellis had asked for his release before. I mean, he did just sign, like, a new 5-year deal right before asking for his release, which was weird. But I saw, you know, both he and Maria have responded on Twitter and opened a pro wrestling tea store, and they're like, hey, we got 2 kids to feed, buy our shirts. I thought milk money was a funny t-shirt for Maria.
Yeah, and, you know, Maria was on maternity leave. I mean, Maria, in some ways, I mean, hopefully in a year or two that she will be able to look at this in a good way of, like, she basically got to have both her kids and have a bunch of time with the kids paid and got to spend most of her time with the kids. So that's hopefully something that will be good for her. I know that this is not ideal whatsoever. I also think that she will be much better out of WWE because
Yeah, I think so too.
I think both of them will. Primo and
I do
Epico.
mourn the loss of their theme tune in WWE.
I mean, it's going to close the week, close out this podcast this week, of
As well
course.
it should.
Primo and Epico are gone. Eric Rowan. I'm sure you were sad to hear. I mean, the day that
I
became.
was sad to hear about that. I love Eric Rowan. I think he's great. I think he's been actually like a really fun part of WWE TV in the past year for me. Like the whole I have a thing in a cage was weird.
The day
But
that
his stuff
mechanical spider came out was the day he was over.
or not, as the case may be. But I mean, that whole thing was stupid. Like, that was real stupid. But I think Eric Rowan's done some really fun stuff in the past. I mean, the Wyatt family stuff, obviously, I have the huge spot in my heart for that. But his stuff with Daniel Bryan, where they were being kind of eco warrior and stuff, like that was great. And then Eric Rowan and like Roman Reigns fighting was great. I loved it. So it's a bummer to me that Eric Rowan is gone. I don't know if he's gonna want to like go other places or ever, but I wish him the best. Like I always really enjoyed him.
Yeah, he was fun. He was good fun at points. I really hope he doesn't go to AEW and get put with Brodie Lee because they need to be apart.
No.
Sarah Logan is a rough one.
Sarah Logan, yeah, that sucks. I mean, she obviously like she traveled to Raw on Monday. She was on Raw on Monday and wrestled. So, you know,
Can I say
those
something
essential
controversial about her?
employees, what?
I think out of all the people, well, of all the people, that have got released, I think that Sarah Logan is one of the top five that this will be long term great for her career. Because, yeah, I know she was in WWE, but I remember when you used to talk about Crazy Mary Dobson and all these, and I've never seen that in WWE Sarah Logan. I've never seen it, and I feel like so many people have talked about her and how great she is. And it's never connected in WWE because they've never presented her that way. So I think that she's someone who, you look at like an AEW women's roster and you go, they could use a Crazy Mary. Like they could
They
use something like that.
could.
So I think she's in a really good position. And I'm not saying all this to try and be pro WWE. I'm saying this for the performers, and I think that she has a really good shot.
Oh yeah, I mean, we want the best for them, obviously. Like her husband still works in WWE, so that's fine. Like I'm sure she's not going to be shit talking the company or anything like that, because like her husband still works there.
Imagine being
But
married to a Viking raider. Oh my God.
well, their whole wedding was Viking themed.
It's not selling me on
But I'm saying like
Yeah,
that's
she
their
likes that.
life.
That's their
Like
thing.
she's as into it as he is. Like I mean they had a Viking wedding. It was actually really cool and sweet. Which I loved. Like being the nerd person that I am, like Vikings aren't necessarily my deal, but if I were going to have another wedding, which I just realized it's my wedding anniversary. Wow, I should probably say hi to my husband at some point today. But like if I were to have another wedding, I would probably go like more in on the geek stuff. Like we had Superman stuff like all around, like decorating, but I don't know, lean into it. It's fun.
Then we had Gallows and Anderson of the Club, who wanted to leave last year and who were involved in the main event of night one of WrestleMania.
Yeah, like I kind of wonder on this list if some of the people were like if they'd been having conversations about wanting to leave, and I don't know, like I don't want to speculate that this is good for them and that they got what they wanted because then they did sign another deal, right, for like a significant amount of money. So I don't know, like maybe they'll be happy, maybe they won't. I never want to speculate that like it's good that someone gets fired, but they are people that I think anywhere else could do so much more. Like if they were to go back to Japan and do stuff over there, they were great in New Japan. If they were to go to AEW, I think they would be brilliant in AEW. If they wanted to be on Impact and do things on Impact, I'm sure they would be great there. Not as many people would see them, but I'm sure they would do great work because the Impact roster is actually really, really cool. So I just feel like in WWE, they've always been a joke. Like they came in with AJ Styles and it felt really big. And they've always just kind of felt like they were super unimportant. Even when they had the championships, it was just like, why did these doofuses have the championships? Like, they were never effective and they were never important and they were never interesting. And it sucked because I'm not as familiar with Carl Anderson as I am with Luke Gallows, but I've seen them do stuff and like Luke Gallows is hilarious. And Carl Anderson is a very good wrestler and they're both great. Like, I remember the. When you were interviewing them or something, and they were like dressed as bellhops,
Yeah, that was funny. That was great.
like that clip is one of my favorite clips. And it's just, they're ridiculous people. And when they do stuff on their own, like outside of the WWE storytelling machine, they're brilliant. So I have no doubts that they're going to be fine and that they're going to find things to do because they're great.
EC3. Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder.
Yeah, EC3. I'm pausing a little bit just because, like,
Yeah, I thought you were going to say it, and I was like, okay, I really thought she'd have something to say about EC3. So I was
oh,
like,
I do.
okay.
I sure do. This is the one, again, I don't wish for anyone to be fired. I don't wish for anyone to lose their job. But this feels like he's free. And this is the shittiest time for him to get released and, obviously not a time where he can go out and find anything. But even more than Gallows and Anderson, I think EC3 is gonna, he's gonna shine anywhere else that he goes. Like, he's so brilliant and he's so amazing. And WWE brought him in and gave him a great theme tune and then did nothing with him. Like, he barely did much in NXT. He was barely able to, like, cut the promos that make him amazing. He was like, he did okay in NXT, but he never really felt that important. Then they brought him to the main roster and had him not speak for months when, like, EC3's big strength is speaking. And then they just had him do nothing. And he's just been like a guy in the 24/7 title chase. He hasn't seemed happy for a long time. If you read between the lines on social media, like, people like Drake Maverick, people like, friends of theirs and whatnot are always kind of like, you deserve better. Like, I remember on his birthday, Drake Maverick posted a really nice thing about him because they're best pals. And he was just like, you deserve better than you're given here. And he does. Like, he's so incredibly talented and so incredibly funny and so incredibly, like, just great and one of my favorites ever. And it has been a travesty that he hasn't gotten to do anything in WWE. So, like, I can't wait to see where he goes next and what he does because I think that he will make the best of this situation. And it also occurred to me, it wasn't Derek Bateman part of one of the mass cuts like a few years ago?
He was, yeah, and I interviewed him right after it. It was
Yeah, because like right after he
2012.
talked to you. No, it was later than that because I was already with Inside the Ropes. So, was it like 2014, 2015?
Yeah, I don't really remember. I remember it was like when me and Robert were still doing
Or
it,
was it
so.
2013? I'm trying to remember, but like maybe I wasn't with Inside the Ropes. Maybe I was just like listening at that point, but I'm not sure. But I remember him being part of like another calling, I suppose. That wasn't obviously as big as this one, but like he's been part of it twice now, apparently. And it was a bummer the first time around. I'm sure it's a bummer now, in some sense. But I don't know. He's gonna land on his feet, and he's gonna do great. I kind of hope he does some indie stuff. Like, selfishly, I want to see him on indie shows because I think he's brilliant and I think he's so good at working a crowd.
He's good. It was May 2013 was
2013, okay.
there we go. Okay, so we also have Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins.
Yeah, that sucks. Like, it's weird to think, like, Zack Ryder's been part of WWE the entire time that I've watched WWE. And Zack Ryder, I don't think gets the credit. I mean, he's been getting credit online, but I don't think he gets credit within the company for revolutionizing their social media strategy. Like, Zack Ryder did it first, right? Like, with his YouTube show, he was the first one to kind of go out and do things on his own and get over on his own. And the picture of him climbing over the fence on his YouTube show has been circulating the past day. And he did it. And then he got pushed off the stage in a wheelchair as punishment, basically. And it sucks. And I mean, WWE was obviously his dream job. He's been a WWE fan his entire life. And this feels really shitty. Like, he's not, in the past few years, he hasn't been like my favorite dude necessarily. But I think he's, like that moment where he won the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania was so cool. And I think he put on Twitter that as he was getting the call, he was looking at the Rob Schamberger painting of that moment of him hugging his dad after he won it. And he was like, and I was smiling. And I got to do my dream. And we'll see what happens now. I think he and Curt Hawkins obviously have a lot going with their YouTube stuff. They have, other things that they're doing, which is good. But like, I don't know. That one made me really sad, even though he's not on TV that often, and even though I don't even really like him that much right now. But he just kind of seems like he should be there, Kind of like Heath Slater, just seems like he should be there.
Heath Slater's the next one on the list. He obviously long time longtime guy. He was the his departure now means that Daniel Bryan is the only remaining member of the original NXT or Nexus,
which is crazy. So crazy. Yeah, Heath Slater's just another longtime guy who every time he was given a story, right? Like every single time he was given something, it was gold. I loved 3MB. I loved the Social Outcasts. I loved Heath Slater and Rhino being the underdog champions because he's, I mean, the fact that his one and only WWE shirt is, I got kids, I need this job, rings a bit funny today. But Heath Slater's been awesome. Everything he's done has been so good. So, 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 so good. And like, he was, I think, the one that made me the saddest out of everybody, just because I loved the fact that he would always be there. I loved him feuding with Flo Rida. I loved just everything about Heath Slater. Every time he showed up, it was a joy. And he stayed over too. Like every time he comes out in front of a crowd, people love him because he's just a joy and a delight and a great wrestler. And he just feels like he should be part of WWE, and now he's not, and it just feels weird.
Eric Young, Leo Rush, and then
Leo Rush surprised me just because he's been like, he was champion not too long ago. I know some people didn't like him backstage, but I don't know, it's a bummer.
And then the last two from the kind of wrestler pool, Rusev, which was a big shocker.
Yeah, it was a big shock, and it wasn't a big shock. Like, there's been stuff backstage, like rumblings of him not being happy, and he's never really given a shit on Twitter about like hiding when he's dissatisfied with something. And I could see how that would rub people the wrong way in kind of a WWE management situation. But like, he's another guy, he's kind of like Zack Ryder, where it almost felt like they got mad at how popular he was and wanted to punish him by making him less popular, which has never made any sense to me. I'm like, why don't you want to make money? But he's brilliant. And I think, I mean, companies, once they open up, are going to be clamoring for him, I'm sure, because he's great at the wrestling part. He's incredibly charismatic. He's, you know, just a likable dude on screen, and he's great. Like, he's great at all of it. So I wonder what this means for Lana. Like, I mean, she still works there, obviously, so she's fine. And she's obviously not in a storyline with Rusev right now either, so it's not going to feel like a jarring split. He hasn't been on TV for quite a while, and now he just won't be, I guess. But it's a bummer, and also I kind of am curious to see where he goes next.
And Drake Maverick with the saddest video I've ever seen.
So heartbreaking. So heartbreaking. This was his dream job. And like, Drake Maverick is someone too he's such a fan of pro wrestling and so smart at pro wrestling that like, he's a dude who gets it. Like, backstage roles, commentary. He was a great general manager of 205 Live. And like, I mean, we don't see him wrestle as often as probably I would like. Like, I enjoy his matches when I see them. I don't know that he's like the best, but he's good at wrestling too. It's not like he's terrible at it. He tends to be more of an on-screen personality, but I hope that, like, you know, because he's been involved in production stuff backstage for other companies before too, and I hope that once this is over, WWE brings him back, because I think he's an incredibly valuable asset to the company. Obviously, we're going to see him next week on NXT. Will be his final appearance, I'm guessing. Like, I don't know. If he beats Jake Atlas, then he'll have more than one match. I don't envision him beating Jake Atlas in the tournament. But he's still going to be part of the Cruiserweight tournament, which it'll be nice to have kind of a send-off. Like, it's a big bummer that he doesn't get a crowd to send him off. Because I think if that match were happening in front of a crowd, which obviously the reason this is all happening is because there aren't crowds and it's a whole shitty situation. But, like, the goodwill toward him would be great. And I don't know, like, it broke my heart to see him crying about it, because this sucks. It really, really sucks. And this was obviously not a call that he was expecting.
Let's go through the rest of the ones. We've got the producers. All of these producers have been furloughed, apart from Kurt Angle, who has been released, which is bizarre. And then the rest of them are Billy Kidman, Mike Rotunda, Pat Buck, Fit Finlay, Sean Devary, Scott Armstrong, Sarah Stock, Shane Helms, and Lance Storm. So lots of agents gone, or producers gone.
The two that stuck out to me, I don't know about you, but like, Lance Storm closed his wrestling school. to work for WWE like not too long ago. So that sucks. That sucks a lot. And Fit Finlay's been there forever. And Fit Finlay has been so important to the women's division in WWE. Like, before anyone gave a shit about the women's division. You know, AJ Lee, the Bellas, like, a bunch of ladies have talked about how Fit Finlay was so important to them. Caitlin, how he would work with them off hours, how he would stay late. He would, you know, like, if they wanted to get better and they wanted to train, it's not like WWE was putting a lot of stock in any sort of women's wrestling until Stephanie McMahon created women's wrestling in 2015. So, you know, Fit Finlay was one of the guys behind the scenes who championed them and who worked with them and who was incredibly, incredibly important. And I think that's a big loss. Like, I know that they're furloughed. I know that they're not released, but it's still, like, it sucks. And obviously, like, there isn't going to be as much of a need for producers when there aren't house shows, there aren't live events, television production is that kind of, you know, bare skeleton crew kind of stuff. But it's, I don't know, Fit Finlay and Lance Storm were the two that kind of, like, really bummed me out.
Yeah, yeah, they were rough ones. I mean, some, in some ways I kind of thought, is it last in, first out, which would make sense in some ways, but then Fit Finlay makes no sense in that regard. So
yeah.
There just doesn't really seem to be like a rhyme or reason as to why it's happening or who's going, and it just
And obviously we don't know, like, backstage stuff. Like, I mean, I'm sure you're gonna mention Mike Chioda in a minute. Like, we don't know if he was, like, thinking about retiring or anything like that. Like, he hasn't made any mention of it. He's been there forever. So, like, there are some people that have been there forever that is affecting. So it's not just like a, you know, last in, first out kind of situation.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, Mike Chioda, that one. I mean, the thing with Mike Chioda is he obviously he'd been there 30 years, he is older, and eventually you have to go with the younger refs, but like, he couldn't have had like a role, like, you know, at the performance center or something. They could keep him on a couple of years, give him something for doing 30 years. Ugh.
I know, it's crazy.
Serena Deeb, Kento Cashin, and Ace Steel, the coaches, they were let go along with the announcement.
And I really like Serena Deeb too, so it's, but it seems like a lot of agents, I don't know how many agents and producers are left, but it seems like a pretty big cut to the staff.
I mean, the thing is, because they don't really run a lot of house shows anymore, they are going to have to drastically downsize the amount of producers they have.
Yeah.
I guess that's just part of the casualty. And then also announcers, Jerry Soto, who I've not seen, but and Aiden English. So they're the two announcers.
Aiden English bums me out too. But he...
Don't you kind of feel good for him though? Like, in the
kinda,
sense of... I mean, what was Aiden English doing? Like,
and he's another one that kind of, if you read between the lines on his social media, he hasn't outright been like, fuck WWE, this is so frustrating, but he does seem dissatisfied with his role, and especially when they took him off commentary too, he's just like what is happening? He's great, like, he is a very good commentator. Actually, I enjoyed him on 205 Live quite a lot. Like, he is significantly better than a lot of the commentators that they have. So I think he's someone who's incredibly talented, who's still like, what, he's like 32 or something. He's younger than us. So he's someone that can like go anywhere and kind of do anything too. And I think like wrestling wise, I think he's good. I love when he sings and stuff. I find him delightful. He's been one of my favorites for a very, very long time. He seems like a good dude. He has some outside stuff too, like outside WWE. He has his Wrestling with Whiskey social media platforms, and he's been doing a lot with that, like doing fundraisers in Chicago, holding events and stuff. Like, he's gotten really into bourbon collecting and is kind of making, like, you know, a YouTube corner of the internet for himself that way under his real name. So it, you know, like, he's kind of started to do some things out with WWE anyway, because they weren't using him, but he has said repeatedly that his in-ring career is not over. You know, he did not decide to retire from in-ring competition. He was taken out of the ring by WWE and put on a commentary table where he killed it. So if we see Aiden English in another company, if we see Aiden English, you know, on the independent scene, I think he'll do great. Like, I want him to be able to explore what he wants to do, and that is something that he definitely wasn't getting to do in WWE. So I'm glad that he can do what he wants now, and I hope that I see him around.
I should actually note, which is kind of a fun story to add on to this, is Warner Ortiz actually put a tweet out today, saying support Matt, who has the current top selling t-shirt of the day at prowrestlingtees.com/Matt Cardona, and it's a t-shirt that just says not there. So, the fact that he's already got the top selling t-shirt tells me that the people who were into him 10 years ago,
Matt
or
Cardona, Zack Ryder.
yes, Zack Ryder, yeah. The people who were into Zack Ryder 10 years ago, are there's enough of them still into him that he's got the top selling t-shirt of the day on Pro Wrestling Tees. So
Good for him.
good for him. Hustle. And I'm if he's as good as I think he is, then, and in some ways, I've sensed for the last couple of years that Zack Ryder's kind of just like, I'm just really happy to be there. And it's like, that's you should always strive to have more than just be happy to be there, because he's good. He did so much, like you say, he kind of reinvigorated the way they did media and social media.
I mean, they
And
mocked him outright on television for taking advantage of YouTube as a platform when it was much newer and when it wasn't much of a thing. And he, filmed shit on his flip phone or whatever. And they ridiculed him for that. But he still obviously has a loyal fan base from that time. And, he's garnered underground support on social media and whatnot. I know the action figure collecting podcast that he and Kurt Hawkins do is very popular. People really like them.
I mean, I
I'm not a
detest.
figure person, so.
How do you say this in a nice way? I love wrestling figures, and I detest Zack Ryder on that podcast with every fiber of my being, and I can't listen to it. I find it unbearable. But outside of that wrestling figure podcast, I love. I think he's a great character, and I really hope to see him succeed. The problem with him in a wrestling figure podcast is he's a very big fan of going, guess what I've got, and you don't have.
Oh, okay.
Oh no. Whereas Kurt Hawkins is always just a bit like, eh. He's just more laid back. But
Yeah.
good for Matt Cardona, as I guess we call him now. So, very quickly about Howard Finkel, I am so bummed about this. He was the voice of my childhood. I love him so much. I don't think there's anybody that's ever, for me, I've not seen anyone who's come by and been able to sort of top what he did. I will never understand why they sort of put him out to pass as early as they did. He should have absolutely been utilized for longer. And it's funny, my mum came around today, socially distant, but my mum was around today, and we were talking, and it came up that Howard Finkel had died. And my mum said to Steve Gunn, she was like, oh my God, I remember when he was wee up the stairs, he'd be doing the Howard Finkel voice for all his figures to come down to the ring. And then he'd announce the winner, and it's like, and I think everybody of my age bracket who watched back then, like, he's like almost bigger to your childhood than like JR is. Like, he was everything to us. So it's a real bummer. He was 69 years old. I know he had health issues the last couple of years. I just, and even like he did the Survivor Series 2011 with CM Punk, and they kind of mocked him on air, and that really rubbed me up the wrong way. That they did that to him, because that shouldn't have been his last. It should have been much bigger than that. So it sucks that he didn't go out in a higher
Was that
way.
his last appearance?
It's the last time I remember him doing a really big. I mean, no, he would announce at WrestleMania the Hall of Fame candidates for years later. But in terms of, well, no, did he do it after that? I don't know. But the
I
last
don't
time,
know.
the
I
last
can't
time he
remember.
announced was CM Punk at Survivor Series, and yeah, he was the best, and I'm sure that next week Finn will do a detailed sort of obituary or whatever. But any thoughts on Howard Finkel? Any memories of him? I mean, I know
I
you've
mean,
had.
it's a bummer. He wasn't the voice of my childhood, so I can't be like, this is, the loss of someone who was very important to me as a kid because I didn't watch when he was ring announcing. But I think watching Retro Raw, he's been such an important part of it. I will never understand the Howard Finkel, Chris Jericho story. Don't try to explain it to me. It just doesn't compute that it was a thing. But he seems like always did kind of want to mock on screen. Like, I'm getting that a lot on Retro, that they're kind of cruel to him. And he seems willing to go with it. Like, he's willing to put himself in that position and just, like, be a buffoon and do whatever is asked of him. But he always just came across as, like, a nice dude. Like, the atrocity that was Legend's House, right, was, like, terrible and a horrible show, to the point where I didn't even get through a whole series. And, like, I watched all of the Big Show show. So I can stick with a series if it's a limited run. And Legend's House was just, it was terrible. He was, like, one of the only dudes in there that actually seemed sound. Like, he actually just seemed like a nice dude. Because, I mean, like, a lot of the other guys, obviously, like, they are big personalities. And some of them just were, they seemed just kind of crazy or confrontational or whatever. And Howard Finkel always just kind of seemed to be the guy that was, like, chilling and wanting to get along with everybody. And from, you know, people I know that have met him and talked to him and spent time with him and that kind of thing, he just, I've never really heard people say bad things about Howard Finkel, which in the wrestling business is kind of telling. You know, nobody has a, oh yeah, that dickhead Howard Finkel story that I've heard any.
No, everybody loves him. Everybody's a massive fan of him. So it's yeah, it sucks. Sucks
It's
big
a
time.
bummer. It sucks.
Let's quickly just go through some AEW and NXT stuff. We're not going to go through the whole show because there's not really a need to. But let's talk about on AEW. Man alive, was Jon Moxley and Jake Hager boring?
It
Whew.
really was. I liked the beginning of it. I liked the beginning of it.
I think the
And I
problem.
heard Jon Moxley on Wrestling Observer Live, you know, talk about how it was a fight and it was really great and all this stuff. And of course he's going to hype it up. And I liked the beginning intensity. I liked some of the, like, the transitions and, you know, this kind of Jake Hager going for the amateur wrestling style at first, but it just kept going and kept going and kept going and kept going. And I think not having a crowd really hurt this one, because this was proper empty arena. It wasn't like wrestlers around ringside or anything cheering and booing. It was just silence. And it's one of the things that, like, if this would have been 5 to 7 minutes, I think I would have really liked it, actually, because I was looking forward to it. But it was like, what, 20?
30.
30. Yeah, that was too long. That was too
Well,
long, for
the other thing
sure.
is they so because I loved all the build up stuff, you know, like having like Ron Finch, how do you pronounce his surname?
Ron
Funches?
Funches?
Funches. Ron
I'm
Funches,
not entirely sure, but.
Mike Goldberg, you know, all the Ariel Helwani, all these people building up. It was great, but it was just like sometimes don't build me up to like lettuce. Do you know what I mean? If you're gonna build me up, give me a big fucking greasy burger or a pasta bake or something. Like, give me something juicy at the end. But they built me up, and then I just got this very long, dull match. And it needed to be fast-paced. It kind of needed a crowd. It just didn't work. And I
I mean,
mean,
I didn't hate it, I think, as much as most people hate it, but it was definitely too long, like way too long. I liked a lot of the stuff that they did. I just, if they could have cut it in half, that would have been great.
maybe we're on a third, and maybe we're gonna see going forward that like maybe there are gonna have to be kind of tests done of empty arena stuff. I also thought it was a horrible idea to have JR doing solo commentary for the
I
match.
agree. Thank you for saying that, because, like, a couple of friends I was talking to yesterday, as they were watching the show live and I was not, they were like, oh my gosh, I just love JR on commentary. It's so great that he's announcing this. And they were like, oh, some of these lines are killing me. They're so funny. And, you know, they love JR. And I know that you love JR. And I do not always love JR the way that everyone loves JR as an announcer. And I thought it was painful because I don't know. He was trying. Like, he was trying his best, and I don't think he was doing an atrocious job, but I think JR needs someone to kind of prop him up
He was in a
and
no-win
add
situation.
to it. Yeah.
There was, because the thing, I mean, I love JR. I think JR's great. I mean, but there was points where like, he was saying things where I was laughing, but not because I should be laughing. Like he's going, "They're both right-handed, both right-handed." I'm like, right. And but the problem is like, is I mean, solo commentary is. I mean, I can't even imagine how hard that is at the best of times. I just don't understand why they didn't have like. You know, Shivani doing it, like they could have done it in different locations, but still commented together. I just didn't get it. It was a very weird choice.
It was very strange. And I think, honestly, if anyone were going to do solo commentary on this match, I think it should have been Shivani, because I think he would have been better at it. I think JR, what you always say about JR, I think, did come through. JR tries to get the emotion of moments across, right? And you could tell that JR has a very vested interest in Jake Hager, because he's a big proponent of Jake Hager, and they're Oklahoma boys, and, you know, like, he loves that guy. So I think JR was trying really hard. I actually enjoyed JR's commentary here more than I usually do, because I could tell that he was putting so much effort into it and really, really trying, but it wasn't enough to carry a match solo. Like, I think Mauro Ranallo could have done this better. I think that I think Michael Cole could have done this better, actually.
And I don't really want to hear anyone do solo. Like, I can't think of an example where I'd go, I really want to just see solo. Like, I think bouncing off people is a good thing. But yeah, I mean, you're asking JR on his own, right? And I know you shouldn't be ageist, and I'm not being ageist here, but like, JR is sort of, you know, he's still got a lot to offer, I think, and I think that's why he's there, but like, he's not at a stage where he can be solo calling matches. Add into that an empty arena, add into that a dull as fuck match, because what he was trying to do is he was trying to make this fucking the main event of WrestleMania, and it wasn't, it just wasn't. So I mean, I respected the attempt, but it didn't work.
Yeah, like, bless them for trying, honestly, because they were trying to, like, make this a really big deal. And I agree. I think the build-up packages and stuff were really good. And it did kind of make me, like, if I really wanted to get invested in it, there was a small part of my brain that was like, ooh, are they going to give Jake Hager the world championship? And of course not. Of course they're not going to make Jake Hager the champion. But they did a good job of building him up as an undefeated monster man, who is also undefeated in MMA, who's in a fight training camp currently, as much as you can be when there's a pandemic happening. So they did a good job of making Jake Hager feel brutal. It's just, it was too long and it was too much.
Also in the show, we should just mention Lance Archer went through in the TNT Championship Tournament.
I wanted to talk about that match. I know we don't have much time. I loved Lance Archer versus Colt Cabana. Loved it, and I loved the build up to Lance Archer versus Colt Cabana. I loved the video package on Colt Cabana beforehand, saying that, you know, yeah, Lance Archer's formidable and he's been doing this for 15 years, but I've been doing this for 15 years too, and I have a lot of success in Japan too, and I have a lot of success everywhere that I've been, and I'm not a joke. People see me as a joke, and I'm not a joke. And I was happy that I was kind of nervous that they were just going to have Lance Archer like squash Colt Cabana. And they didn't. Like, they gave them a pretty proper match, and I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, no, it was fun. I mean, you knew Cabana was going to lose, but they did a good job of kind of, you know, Cabana got a lot in, and it wasn't a
There
squash.
Were little parts of my brain where I was like, are they going to do it? Are they going to do it? Are they going to have Colt Cabana win? And, like, of course they're not going to, but the story got me, where I was like, I kind of want Colt Cabana to beat Lance Archer.
Jericho was also brilliant on commentary.
Very good.
Shouting about Britt Baker being a dentist. I honestly think he could do commentary when he retires if he wanted to. Like, he's that
easily.
Good
he was great. I mean, during Lance Archer and Colt Cabana too, where he was putting both of them over. I mean, he was very much like, Lance Archer's on another level, but like, don't discount Colt Cabana.
Mm-hmm. The Bubbly Bunch was also phenomenal.
Yes.
Loved the Bubbly Bunch. And yeah, overall, I mean, I've got to say, AEW, this was maybe for me one of the weakest shows they've ever done, just because I felt like it started off strong, and then as it was going on, nothing of it felt like it was something I needed to see. I felt like I could have skipped it, and I was hoping that Hager and Moxley was going to deliver, and they hyped me for it, but I was underwhelmed this week. I think they're in trouble with their rating this week, to be honest.
Probably. I mean, I think ratings are just kind of in trouble across the board. It wasn't terrible. I still enjoyed watching it. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot of stuff that didn't necessarily feel like it had to be there. But they're trying. Like, they're doing their best. And I did enjoy it. I think I'm getting used to the empty arena thing more and more, where it's not bothering me so much, because it's just kind of like retraining your brain to like, this is what wrestling is for now. And the Bubbly Bunch just, like, cracked me up. Sammy Guevara, like, counting and being like, uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, 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 and, like, punching a punching bag, because he's like, I'm very important, I promise. I love him. I think he is phenomenal.
Okay, so over in NXT, can we talk about the absolute fucking glory that was Charlotte Flair's interview? I loved it. I loved that interview. She was fucking selling me everything I needed. Like, because obviously, you know, we're building to Charlotte Flair and Io Shirai because Io won the ladder match. But in this interview, she's bringing up Mia Yim. She's
Mia Yim being her first opponent.
Yep, she's bringing up Mia Yim being her first opponent. She's bringing
which
up
was really cool continuity.
Uh huh. And then she's bringing up like Ripley about how, you know, she might be the woman one day. She talks about beating Trish Stratus. She talks about making Rousey suffer, defeating the undefeated Asuka. Like, by the end of this interview, she basically told you how fucking great she is, but set up like a couple of things and like made you kind of want to see her get her teeth kicked in. So I thought she did a really good job. She's criticized a lot for promos, and I get it because her cadence is just unhumanly, but I thought she did a really good job here.
I thought this was very good, and I'm very critical of Charlotte promos, but I thought this was brilliant. And I like the fact that she was highlighting so many other competitors, and she didn't do that Chris Jericho in 2000 thing of just calling everyone else shitty and beneath her, right? She was like, no, they are all very formidable, but she's like, I need to beat Mia Yim again, and I need to beat Rhea Ripley again, and I need to, you know, put Io Shirai down and all of this stuff. And it does make me want to see her get her teeth kicked in because she's just so smug and self-important, but she's also right. Like, I am a Charlotte Flair fan. Like, sorry, dudes. Like, I think she is amazing at what she does. I think she needs to not do a moonsault because that part of her repertoire is not amazing. And I wish she could speak like a human more often. But I think that she has an aura about her, and I think she does tend to put on very, very good matches. So she is the best, and she is kind of a different type of monster at this point, right? Like, last time she was NXT champion, she wasn't a monster type person. She wasn't like the regal queen who's above everyone else. This is a very different dynamic of Charlotte as NXT champion. I kind of wish that she would just stay on NXT and not be on Raw, because like her interview on Raw was not bad or anything like that, but it does feel weird to have her just come out on Raw and talk about the NXT championship and be on Raw. Like, why are you here? You don't go here anymore, as Bianca Belair would say. Like, you are supposed to be in NXT. So I get that it's because ratings and they're trying to hype up NXT on Wednesday nights, and the cross promotion aspect of it is probably good, but it feels a bit weird that she's basically saying the same thing on both programs. But yeah, I mean, this interview was great. I really, really enjoyed it.
Elsewhere on the show, we obviously at the beginning of the show, we had Finn Balor defeating Fabian Aichner.
Really good match.
Yeah, fun match. So they seem to still be building towards the match that cannot happen, which is fine. Talk to me about the NXT Interim Cruiserweight Championship Tournament. On this show, we saw Akira Tozawa beating Isaiah Scott. And they're doing it in like a group thing. How is the sort of the structure of it working for you? And is it something that you think you could see yourself getting into?
It's working and I am into it. I obviously, like, I am going to just champion the Cruiserweight Championship as much as I can. I think it's an interesting opportunity for guys to get to kind of show what they do. Like, Akira Tozawa is a former Cruiserweight champion, so him winning over Isaiah Swerve Scott made sense to me because he wants to win the title again. I think the groups and the brackets are really interesting. Like, I'm really bummed that Drake Maverick versus Jake Atlas is round one, because I want Drake Maverick to go on so that he can have more matches in WWE, but also, like, I love Jake Atlas with all of my heart and soul. So it's like, it would have been really cool underdog story, right? Of like Drake Maverick kind of like coming up and, you know, ultimately probably not winning the Cruiserweight Championship. But I don't know. Like, I think there would be a really good story to tell there, and I just don't want either of them to lose. But I don't know. It's giving us some new matches. They're having El Hijo del Fantasma in it, and, you know, kind of building him up and doing video packages on him, which is cool. So I like it. I like the tournament. And obviously Jordan Devlin cannot come to defend the Cruiserweight Championship at this point, so it makes sense to want to have an interim champion. And then when the world opens back up and we can actually see people again, they have a built-in story of, you know, who's the undisputed Cruiserweight champion.
Yeah. I mean, it's, they're trying something. I can't fault that. It's not probably going to be for me. But I think that if you're into the Cruiserweight division, I think they're doing a fun thing that, you know, will keep people interested until such times as people can travel again.
Who do you think the final's going to be? Because it seems like Kushida's kind of a lock, right?
Yeah, I assume Kushida probably wins it. But I don't know who he ends. I mean, I don't really know who who would be in the final with him? I mean, because
I kind of want it to be Jake Atlas.
that would be lovely. I don't think that's going to happen, but it'd be nice if they did something like that. Because it's something that didn't work for me in the show, and I don't want to be down about it, but I just didn't get it. Was Tegan Knox beating Raquel Gonzalez? And I know it was help from Shotzi Blackheart, but like to me, one of the big moments that you would build to is like Tegan Knox finally beating Raquel Gonzalez, and to do it in this kind of 3-minute distraction match felt kind of like bad main roster stuff.
I feel like it's indicative of her whole feud with Dakota Kai, right? Because remember when she beat Dakota Kai in like a 3-minute
It's been
match, and we were
mishandled
like,
since day one, yeah.
yeah, it was like, well, why did that happen? Why wouldn't you have more of a build to that? Why wouldn't you want to wait for Tegan Knox and Dakota Kai to like have a big blow off? And yeah, Raquel Gonzalez going up against Tegan Knox, it feels like that should have, I don't know, either ended in shenanigans or Raquel should have beaten her in a shady way with Dakota Kai, and then Shotzi Blackheart could have come out and helped and set up the tag match after. I don't know. It feels off. The alignments feel off, and I'm not a huge fan of it. And I want to be a fan of it because I really like Tegan Knox and I like everyone involved. I'm happy to see Shotzi get involved in it too, because love her so much. But I agree with you. It felt weird because it seems like, well, you've beaten her now, so where's the drama?
Because like the idea, like, because I was reading like a review of it, and it was like, oh, Gonzalez got the finish, protected Gonzalez and builds up Tegan Knox. I'm like, no, like beating Dakota Kai here would have built up Tegan Knox, but like if Raquel Gonzalez is like the muscle, if you go back and watch like Shawn Michaels and Diesel back in the day, like nobody beat Diesel for ages. Like it was a long time before Diesel got beat or got something done to him. And I think to just have Raquel Gonzalez, I just don't get it. NXT are usually
It
very good
feels
at.
like they're making Raquel Gonzalez more of like an Eric Rowan to Daniel Bryan, where Eric Rowan would get beat quite a bit.
Yeah, well, at least build it up for a month and put it as a TV main event or something. Like just do something 3 minute and nothing. So they obviously also in the show were building up that Velveteen Dream was waiting for an answer from Adam Cole on his sex couch, but he's not getting the answer. This played out in a very unique way. I mean, it was very sexual, Sandra.
It was very sexual. I was a bit upset that this segment took place with shirts on.
Same.
I mean, I just feel like an opportunity was wasted there,
If
an
you're gonna have
opportunity for me to see all of the abs.
Finn Balor and Velveteen Dream together, why would they ever have clothes on? Tops on.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. It was weird. I mean, Velveteen Dream, what was he even saying? Like, undisputedly, you're the longest reigning champion or whatever. And I'm like, but he's not, though. Like, what are
Yeah.
you even talking about? Like, he wasn't making any sense. I'm kind of, maybe the bloom is off the rose with Velveteen Dream for me a little bit. Like, I still think he's great and I still think he's incredibly talented and whatever, but I don't know. He seems a little bit up his own arse a little bit, and I make some weird aspersions to people. I'm still salty about the Marina Shafir stuff because I didn't like it.
I really feel like if Finn Balor and I'm gonna say this so many times over the next few months, so I apologize, but it's just how I feel. Imagine how good Velveteen Dream Finn Balor would be in front of a crowd.
Oh, it'd be brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And like, is this kind of a side? Because Velveteen Dream still is theoretically going after Adam Cole, right? For the championship?
Yes, I mean, I assume what's gonna happen is we're gonna get Dream versus Balor and like Imperium are going to cost Balor the match, so Velveteen Dream wins, then he's a better case to get a title shot or something like that.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes plenty of sense. Did you see Velveteen Dream's tweet about Finn Balor today?
No, what did he say?
Let me screen cap this and send it to you because it's pretty glorious. It's top five things that Finn Balor wishes he had no memory of.
Okay, I'm
And
excited.
I'm gonna send you an image in
Okay.
just a moment, as soon as my phone stops freezing, because
But I mean
it just
the
it
gist.
was it's another Velveteen Dream thing where I was like, oh, you're going there. Oh, okay. That's
I mean,
interesting.
I am here for Balor versus Dream, so
I am
okay, let's
too,
see this
and I
photo.
look forward to it next week with all of the abs on display.
Top five things Finn Balor wishes he had no memory of. Oh, Kathy Kelly. That's
Yep,
great.
that top one with Kathy Kelly.
Raw.
Yep.
It's Raw Run, The Demon, and the Universal Title Run. Wow.
Yeah.
Hoo-hoo-hoo.
So he's going there.
He's going there.
He loves to bring up partners and ex-partners,
He really
apparently.
does. And the other thing I want to ask you about on NXT was they're going to have a temporary tag team partner for Matt Riddle to defend the NXT Tag Team Championships with, and the interim partner is Timothy Thatcher. They faced Undisputed Era in the main event of the show, and they retained the titles for Riddle and Dunn. How did this work for you?
I am of two minds about it. On one hand, yay, Timothy Thatcher. I admit that I have not seen that many Timothy Thatcher matches just because there's a lot of wrestling. I don't know if you were aware. But I've
I've been
always
seldom.
heard that he's like phenomenal and fantastic and amazing. And he seemed like a great choice for Pete Dunne to like pluck out of the NXT roster and be like, hey, let's give this guy a spotlight. So I think it's great for him. It does sort of erase the goodwill that the Broserweights have built up for me because, like, I was very salty about the Broserweights winning the Dusty Classic just kind of as a concept, but then they won me over with their delight and charm. And now it's like the Broserweights light, and they're still just two dudes who are put together, but it's even kind of like worse because we don't have golf cart segments, and they still just kind of won over Undisputed Era, who have been so dominant for the past ever. So it's fine. Like, they want to keep the title on Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne.
Matt Dunn. Big Matt
And
Dunn.
big Matt Dunne. And I mean, like, if Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne and Timothy Thatcher in a stable, that sounds great, right? That sounds like a pretty cool idea. Not going to be mad about it, but it's triggering that part of my brain that it's just like, yeah, but you're just two dudes together. You're not a team. Why is this? Why are you better than the team who's really good, especially if we haven't seen Timothy Thatcher in NXT? But it made Timothy Thatcher look great because he's great.
I'm curious because I've seen Timothy Thatcher as in like I could point him out of a lineup, but I don't think I've ever watched a Timothy Thatcher match. Maybe I've watched one in some like maybe you've got me to watch one and I've forgotten about it. But
See, and the thing is, I don't think I would have gotten you to watch one because I can't think of any other matches that I've seen. I've seen clips.
so I'm curious because it feels like, and I could be wrong, it feels like he's like here's number 468 of the independent wrestlers that WWE sign for you to watch. So I don't know whether he's going to click for me if he's a character or if he's more just a pure wrestler who maybe he's not going to be for me. I don't know, but he had a good show in here. They put him over strong with Riddle. You know, it does open up the idea that when Pete Dunne's eventually able to travel again, if they keep the belts on, that you could have an interesting kind of dynamic of like, so does Thatcher just help you retain the belts for 4 months and then he gets nothing, and then Pete
Yeah,
Dunne
like,
comes
is
back and
he
takes the
gonna be like,
glory?
hey, so I should actually be the champion? Or are they just gonna like freebird the titles? I think there's an interesting story dynamic to be at play here, right? Like,
I mean, you could even do something like, I mean, I mean, I'm actually really into the idea and I keep thinking about ideas, but like, you could do a thing where like Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne win Tag Team of the Year, but it's really based on Thatcher's work of retaining the belts. So like, then you've got this, there's like loads of drama you can build up within that. So I think it is a
Well, because
good
like one
idea.
of the things that came to my mind is Chikara did a story last year where Mr. Touchdown was the champion and he broke his leg, like legit broke his leg. So he was out and he couldn't be champion anymore. So he went to his step cousin-in-law, Dasher Hatfield, and was like, you know, I bestow upon you be the interim champion for me, like defend the title for me, keep it warm for me, like, you know, do whatever. And so Dasher Hatfield was the interim champion for a while, defended the belt on countless occasions, like multiple occasions he defended it. So when Mr. Touchdown came back and was like, hey, thanks, dude, like, thanks for keeping the championship for me, Dasher was like, excuse me, like, I am the champion. I've earned this. I actually defended it. You never even did because you got hurt right away. And it set off this really great story between the two of them. And I could see them doing something like that, right, with Timothy Thatcher and Pete Dunne, where Pete Dunne's like, hey, dude, like, thanks so much for, you know, stepping into my place. And now we can all be pals. And Timothy Thatcher gets very upset about it and is like, but I'm the one who's been here doing all of the work. Where have you been? You've just been not here because you couldn't travel. So why are you getting the glory? Why are you still called the tag team champion? I think that's, you know, it could be an interesting way to go. It wouldn't be the exact same story because it's a tag situation, but I like the potential drama.
So I thought NXT though this week was, even though the the Raquel Gonzalez thing kind of drove me crazy. Like, I thought NXT was definitely the better watch this week and definitely the better
Really?
show. Yeah, like by a mile.
I mean, yeah, the main of I think I watched AEW in two parts. Like, I watched most of it and then I switched off before Jon Moxley and Jake Hager because I had heard that it was dull. So I think, like, and I just watched Jon Moxley and Jake Hager like right before we got on
Okay,
the
now
call to record this.
here's an honest question.
Yeah.
Did you fast forward any of Hager and Moxley?
I did not, but I did make a bagel in the middle of it.
I did fast forward 5 minutes
Okay.
in the middle because I was like, I had to go and I had like stuff to do because I was doing garden stuff. So I was like, I could skip 5 minutes. There's still 20 minutes left, and that's a bad sign.
Yeah,
Like
it's
to be
not
like,
good.
oh, I'll just skip five because like. I would put things off if I'm really into it, but I was like, oh well, nobody'll care.
Yeah, I kind of like carried the computer with me into the kitchen and was like, well, I'll just like make some food and start my tea boiling and that kind of stuff as the match was happening. So it's not like I was paying rapt attention to every single of the many, many minutes of the match. But I didn't fast forward it.
Okay, so that is basically it for us. Thank you everybody for listening. We actually just got a really nice comment on Facebook about our Patreon subscription, so I thought this would be a good time to plug it. Jason Dawson said, "Have to say the quality of the output in the last month or so has been outstanding, Kenny. It really feels like everyone has stepped up their game." And you know,
Oh, thanks. That's nice.
we've been trying to make things. Not that we didn't try before, but you
No, we
know,
always try.
we
We
do always
really
try.
do.
But like sometimes things just click a little bit more than they do, and it seems to be happening now. So, you know, if you are at home or have a little bit of income that you can give to us to support us, patreon.com/insidetheropes. We have got levels from $1 just to say thank you, and then from $6 to $10 of multiple content. And there's pretty much 5 or 6 days a week, there's new stuff coming out. So it's consistent, and there's archives going back 2 or 3 years, no, 3 or 4 years, 3 years. And there's loads of stuff there. Pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews, articles, podcasts, loads of stuff. So we hope you will go over there and check it out. And also youtube.com/insidetheropes where you can get interview content from us. And that's about it for the plugs. You can get Sondra on Twitter, Sondra with RW, and I'm Kenny MC1985. I wanted to give you a bit of a day off, Sondra, so you don't have to do
Yeah,
the
it was kind of
plugs.
nice. I get to just listen to the plugs, sit back and relax. It's kind of a nice feeling.
I listened to Wade Keller do his interview with Court Bauer the other day, and on like the main feed of his podcast, and it was like every 5 minutes he does a 3 minute ad, and I was like,
I haven't listened to that in a
my
long time. It just,
God.
I mean, shill. Like, you
Well,
gotta shill, you gotta make a living, but.
you got a show, but like, you know, give people enough time to enjoy some of it.
I
So,
feel like
you know.
sometimes there's not enough time between his plugs to like go up and sign up to the
Yeah, I
subscription
know.
service
I
before you
know.
hear another one.
Oh, anyway, here to play us out is the greatest theme tune in WWE history. It is Mike and Maria Kanellis. They've provided us with some fun moments in WWE. Sadly, not as big as we had hoped that they would be, but hopefully they can. You know, Mike Bennett and Maria can go elsewhere where this is all over and make a name for
She'll
themselves
always
that
be
way.
the first pregnant champion.
She will be. You can't take that away from her. And Sandra and I will be back. We'll probably do an overrun on Sunday or Monday when everything's kind of died out or when there's more news. And we will go from there. So, Sandra, I hope you
And
enjoy your.
retro will be happening.
Retro will be happening
Always
again.
does.
Oh, every time. So, yeah, and April 17th, 2000 is one of my favourite Raws. So I'm prepared for Sandra to hate it, but we'll see.
I'm really nervous to like, I feel like it's a lot of pressure because I almost feel like I'm supposed to hate it now,
No. You're
but
not supposed to, but I'm building up so much because then if you don't like it, I'm so aware that you're not gonna like it that I'm not bummed out about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's always
Oh
good to
yeah,
overegg.
absolutely. Well, I mean, if it's a McMahon heavy episode, which is what I'm guessing, because if it's something that you love and you think that I won't, I'm guessing it's a McMahon heavy episode, which sometimes those lead to some good conversation. So
Yeah, we'll
I'm
see.
intrigued for sure.
So thanks for listening, everybody. Here is Mike and Maria. Bye.
Bye.